Hi, this is John Cryer, and I am hosting a new 7-part true crime podcast called Lawyers, Guns, and Money that'll challenge everything you think you know about U.S. covert operations and presidential misconduct. From Jack Bryan, the director of American PSYOP, comes the incredible true story of John Mattis, a newly sworn-in Miami public defender in the 1980s who has found himself completely in over his head.
I step off the plane, and there is a van with a couple guys with Uzis. And one of them in broken English said, "Welcome to Bogota, John."
Mattis's first felony defendant has been arrested for having a machine gun and tells Mattis a dangerous secret.
He was shipping arms into Central America on behalf of the CIA. As a first-time lawyer, I want to act like I know what I'm doing.
But with the help of a Colombian drug smuggler...
How much money the CIA raised by hitting up drug dealers?
A lot of money, millions of dollars.
An Alabama mercenary...
They were prepared to die to the last man. I saw this in them. I saw the fire in their eyes. And they made me their war chief.
And a newly elected senator, John Kerry...
We are looking at allegations of drug running, gun smuggling, conspiracy to commit murder and murder itself.
He'll fight to free his client.
The judge said, "Show me in a courtroom how we were at war."
Expose an illegal war being run by the White House.
I mean, I wanted him involved, but I didn't want to be on record as doing it.
And somehow stay alive in the process.
I just escaped a kidnapping by the CIA in Costa Rica.
This is Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
So you have a man in an Armani suit standing on the bow of a boat with a rocket launcher and says, "If I lose sight of you, I will launch. You will be vaporized."
Available everywhere starting October 29th, or get it ad-free and early starting October 22nd at lawyersgunsandmoney.supercast.com. There you'll find bonus episodes along with exclusive content. Subscribe now.
MSW Media.
Hello, and welcome to the Daily Beans for Friday, December 24th, 2021. Today, Donald Trump files his appeal to the Supreme Court in his bid to block the National Archives from handing documents over to the 1-6 Committee. An hour later, the House filed for an expedited ruling in the same case. Kim Potter is found guilty on both counts of manslaughter. Biden backs a voting rights filibuster exception. And Madison Cawthorn's earthly vessel files for divorce after just 21 Scaramucci's. I'm Allison Gill.
And I'm Amy Carrero.
Ha ha ha. 21 Scaramucci's with the earthen vessel. Happy Christmas Eve if you're a Christmaser.
Yeah, happy Christmas Eve. Or happy Nochebuena. Feliz Nochebuena.
Nice. Nice. That sounds lovely. That sounds way better than, you know, Merry Christmas.
It does sound nice, but then usually if you're from the Latin persuasion, or I should say the Caribbean Latin persuasion, you'd be roasting a whole pig in the backyard. So not so nice for the pig.
No, bad for the pig. Bad news for the pig. For real. Today is going to be an interesting show. We have some tasty Schadenfreude. Amy, you get to deliver that good news.
Yum.
And I have two chats today with a couple of lawyers. First of all, Michael Cohen's attorney in the lawsuit that he just filed against the former guy in the Bureau of Prisons and William Barr. And that attorney's name is Andy Laufer, good friend. And then a Fox News slayer, Ethan Behrman, who is the host of the Law Junkie podcast. We're going to talk about Kim Potter and the Elizabeth Holmes trial. So
cool.
Stick around for that. And then, of course, we got good news at the end. So it's going to be a good show. And we do have a lot of news to get to. I thought it might be a slow news day. It was not.
No.
Nope. And, you know, we record, this is Friday's episode. We recorded on Thursday. I'm interested to see what happens Friday. Usually the Friday news dump is pretty big, but you know, it is going to be Christmas Eve, so we'll see what happens. But let's get to the news today. Let's hit the hot notes.
Hot notes.
All right. The former guy appealed to the Supreme Court on Thursday to block the release of documents from his White House to the House committee investigating the January 6th riot at the Capitol, escalating his effort to keep about 700 pages of records secret. Hours after Trump's request was filed, the House committee asked the justices to expedite their consideration of the request with a proposed schedule that would allow the court to say by the middle of next month, January, whether it was going to take up the case. The committee, which is charged with investigating the U.S. Capitol attack to provide recommendations for preventing such assaults in the future, seeks the documents as it explores Trump's role in trying to overturn the election. That includes his appearance at the January 6th rally when he directed followers to go to the Capitol, where lawmakers were set to certify the election results and, quote, fight for their country. The documents are currently held by the National Archives. In filing submitted to SCOTUS on Thursday, Trump asked the justices to take up a full review of the case, and he requested that while they consider his position, they put a hold on the lower court decision permitting the disclosure of his records while they consider taking up the case, because he's stupid and he doesn't realize that his appeal automatically extends that stay. At issue are hundreds of documents, including activity logs, schedules, speech notes, Mark Meadows notes, and three pages of the handwritten notes from him, from Meadows. Paperwork that could reveal the goings-on inside the West Wing as Trump supporters gathered goings-on, the shenanigans.
The shenanigans. It's just all like doodles of like stick figures, like, here's
the
Mark.
The ballyhoo. Yeah. The ballyhoo and goings-on. Disrupting the certification of the 2020 vote, we know that. The records could answer some of the most closely guarded facts of what happened between Trump and other high-level officials, including those under siege on Capitol Hill on January 6th. Trump is also seeking to keep secret a draft proclamation honoring two police officers who died in the siege and memos and other documents about supposed election fraud and efforts to overturn Trump's loss of the presidency. Love the way they put that.
Good grief. That's a lot. Again, is he representing himself? Like, I don't understand. Where are they getting? I don't know. It seems like no one knows what they're doing.
No, he's got terrible lawyers.
It just because what? No one will take this up?
I that's what I'm guessing.
It's got to be that, right? Because like, come on. If there's an argument to have, someone will have it. But if there isn't, then you'll just get the worst of the worst. Anyway, President Joe Biden says he supports making an exception to the Senate filibuster rules in order to pass voting rights legislation. If the only thing standing between getting voting rights legislation passed and not getting it passed is the filibuster, I support making the exception of voting rights for the filibuster, Biden told ABC News' David Muir? I never know how to say that. In an interview that aired Thursday morning. It's the most direct answer Biden has given on his position on the filibuster and voting rights. CNN's Anderson Cooper asked Biden in a CNN town hall in November, when it comes to voting rights, just so I'm clear, though, you would entertain the notion of doing away with the filibuster on that one issue. Is that correct? And he said, and maybe more. Ooh. Since Democrats won a slim majority in Congress, Republicans have blocked several Democratic-sponsored bills that seek to expand voting access and aim to end voter suppression, arguing that the proposals are a federal power grab, blah, blah, blah. Likely story. That's led some progressive Democrats and activists to demand an end to the filibuster rule, which requires 60 votes to advance most legislation in order to pass federal voting rights protections. But Democrats also don't have the votes they need in the Senate to change the filibuster due to the position from members of their own party, including Senators Joe Manchin from West Virginia and Kristen Sinema of Arizona. In a letter sent to Democratic colleagues dated Monday, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer announced that the Senate will consider voting rights legislation once Congress resumes in January, as early as the first week back.
All right.
Fingers crossed.
Here's hoping. Yeah. Here's hoping. And some justice. The former police officer who fatally shot a man in Minneapolis in the suburbs after seeming to mistake her gun for her taser was convicted of two counts of manslaughter on Thursday, a rare guilty verdict for a police officer that's likely to send her to prison for years. The jury deliberated across 4 days before agreeing on guilty verdicts from Kimberly Potter. She's the 49-year-old white woman who testified she had never fired a gun on the police force in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, until she shot a single bullet into the chest of Dante Wright, a 20-year-old black man who had been driving to a car wash in April. Judge Regina Chu ordered that Ms. Potter be immediately sent to prison And her deputies led her out of the courtroom in handcuffs as one of the relatives shouted, "Love you, Kim."
Oh, boy.
As the verdict was read. Miss Potter looked down briefly and then glanced at the jurors, but did not appear to cry as she did when she testified earlier in the trial. Judge Chu will sentence Ms. Potter at a hearing scheduled for February. The standard sentence for the most serious charge, first-degree manslaughter, is a little over 7 years in prison, and the maximum penalty is 15 years. Prosecutors have indicated they will ask the judge to hand down a longer-than-average prison term, and Ms. Potter's lawyers are likely to ask for sentencing below the standard range. And to me, this was a surprising verdict, mm-hmm. but the correct one. I didn't think they were going to be able to get her on first-degree manslaughter, but they did. And Dante Wright's mother, Katie Bryant, said of the verdict, "Today, Minnesota has shown that police officers are not going to continue to pull their gun instead of their taser. And we made this happen. You made this happen. And Dante Wright made this happen." And finally, we have Amy with a little Schadenfreude.
Schadenfreude! Ha ha ha, my favorite, a Schadenfreude. Ah, okay. From Mark Fronfelder at Boing Boing, Christina Cawthorn is divorcing her husband Madison, a notorious pathological liar, racist insurrectionist, and alleged sex pest, after having been married for just 8 months. Cawthorn, who likens women to earthen vessels, blames his hard work on the Capitol for the break. Okay, what? What? That makes no sense, Madison. Make it make sense. A real estate investor before running for office, Cawthorn has been called a rising star of the Republican Party, but has also stirred up plenty of controversy since stepping into the political limelight, including for a racist campaign statement about Senator Cory Booker and voting to overturn the 2020 election, despite no evidence of widespread fraud. A friend has also disputed Cawthorn's claim that he was abandoned to die in a fiery tomb after being seriously injured as a passenger in a car crash that left him paralyzed when they were teenagers. There have also been allegations of sexual harassment and misconduct made against Cawthorn by women who attended Patrick Henry College with him. Four women told BuzzFeed News that Cawthorn behaved in an aggressive, misogynistic, and predatory manner while attending classes there. Cawthorn has previously denied ever doing anything sexually inappropriate.
Yeah, they were like, there were warnings, like, don't go in a car ride with him. He was the leader of what people called the douche crew when he was at Patrick Henry College.
I mean, you know what really got me also with the pictures of him in, like, Hitler's vacation home? Like, mm-hmm. bucket list. Like, what? That's your bucket list, dude? I don't know. Just bad vibes all around.
Yeah, it's gross. Many believe he should be forced to carry his marriage to term.
Yeah.
After only 21 Scaramucci's. So, there we have it. That's your Schadenfreude today. Thank you, Amy. Everybody, we'll be right back with a couple of interviews with some amazing lawyers. Michael Cohen's attorney, Andy Laufer, and Law Junkie podcast host, Ethan Behrman. Stay with us. Hey, everybody. It's AG for the Daily Beans. Can you even guess how many hours we spend inactive, just sitting at our desks or on the couch, watching TV, staring at screens? A sedentary lifestyle is very unhealthy. It's very bad for your circulation. But what if we could turn those inactive times into opportunities to burn calories and stay moving? That's exactly what I'm doing thanks to my new Cubi. That's Cubii. It is a compact elliptical unit that fits right under my desk or right in front of my couch so I could be pedaling my feet and getting a workout and keeping my joints moving while I'm sitting and watching TV or at my computer. In fact, I'm using it right now and you cannot hear it because it is whisper quiet. It's very easy on your joints, low impact, and a recent clinical study shows it helps burn 84% more energy than just sitting alone. We all say I'd work out more if I had more time. Well, Cubi makes it easy to burn calories while you're relaxing and stay active anytime from virtually anywhere. It's awesome. And it's also perfect for anyone who might be housebound or otherwise needs something to help improve circulation and keep active. So if you have a parent or a loved one who has limited mobility and needs a way, like a low impact way to stay healthy, Cubi would be a great gift. I love my Cubi. I know you will too. You can take advantage of Cubi's 30-day risk-free in-home trial and turn your least active times into your most productive opportunities to stay healthy. Visit Cubi.com/beans to find the Cubi elliptical model that's right for you. That's Cubi, Cubii.com/beans. You'll be glad you did. Everybody, welcome back. I'm joined by my friend who is at the Laufer Law Firm and is one of the two lawyers that has prepared and filed the lawsuit against Donald Trump for Michael Cohen. And It's not just Donald Trump, is it, Andy? Welcome, by the way.
Thanks for having me, Allison. I appreciate being here.
It's so good to see you, and it's good to talk to you. It's been a while since you've been on the show.
Yes.
And then I found out you were one of the two lawyers behind this lawsuit, and I couldn't wait to talk to you about it. So let's dig into it. Who are you suing?
So we're suing Donald Trump, obviously, Bill Barr, and a number of other Federal Bureau of Prison and federal parole personnel. And the crux of the suit is essentially retaliation for, Michael Cohen's lawful exercising of his First Amendment rights.
Right. And let's remind everyone of the story that I'm sure we all know. But when Michael Cohen's book was about to come out, all of a sudden, there were requests to remand him back to prison. Tell us a little bit about kind of how his rights were pretty much just like absolutely eviscerated.
Right. So basically what happened here was Michael was serving time up at Otisville. No issues really to speak of up there. And because of the COVID emergency, he was granted furlough due to his having comorbidities. Bureau of Prisons agreed that he would fit under the criteria based upon what former AG Barr issued in two memorandum. So based upon that, on the furlough being granted, he was sent, he was allowed to go home. Obviously, home confinement. After 30 days, they were going to switch him over to full home confinement. So, you're on furlough and then you go to full home confinement. They put an ankle monitor on you and all those fun things. So really all it is paperwork. Someone comes to your home where you are and you fill out the paperwork. They put another monitor on you. They do whatever they need to do and they go and you just adhere to what the terms of your home confinement are. In this particular instance, what happened was instead of just having someone go to his apartment in Manhattan, he was ordered by BOP to go down to their offices in downtown Manhattan. At that time, he was presented with an agreement which governs all home confinement arrangements with a special added paragraph in there, which is never included, essentially forbidding him from engaging in social media, discussing anything with press about his case or anything else, things of that nature, totally strangling his ability to, exercise his rights and speak freely about whatever he chooses to speak about. Now, prior to all this, he was on social media like Twitter and things of that, pitching his book, would discuss Donald Trump and all the inner things that he would engage in, discriminatory things, embarrassing things that he was privy to. And, say this on Twitter and put hashtag we'll speak soon. So after all this, they had put this paragraph into the agreement. Michael refused to sign it. And, can we negotiate this? And when they went back to their supervisors to allegedly further negotiate it, none of that really happened. One of the defendants that we've named said, we're violating you, put him in cuffs, knowing that he has all these comorbidities. And we're in the height of a viral pandemic that's, thousands of people are dying a day. And they knew that his risk for death would and illness was significantly higher. Shipped him back to Otisville. First, he was supposed to go to MCC, then he went to MDC. They kept him there for a while in Brooklyn, and then they shipped him back up to Otisville. Now, his attorney at the time filed a habeas petition, went before Judge Hellerstein. Judge Hellerstein couldn't believe what happened here. Said throughout his order that in my 21 years sitting on the bench, I've never seen any kind of retaliation. Ruled that all the defendants named in that habeas petition, Trump wasn't named in it, but Barr and everyone else that we've named, retaliated against Michael for exercising his First Amendment rights under the Constitution, set him free immediately. So that is the basis. I know it's a little long-winded here, but that is the basis for our lawsuit against these individuals under a Bivens cause of action. And we also have Federal Tort Claims Act claims against the United States as a whole.
Yeah, and that's all that is actually extremely familiar to me, Andy, because as you know, I got notices and recommendations about updates to the Hatch Act after my podcast started, about restricting my ability to use social media and to, you know, actually wasn't allowed to use Trump's name specifically. They tried to update the Hatch Act without sending it through Congress, just executive order stuff, you know, like
something like authoritarians do, things like that.
Yes. And, you know, and then they had given me this telework agreement that said, you know, I had to be at my desk at home. I couldn't leave. If my little, you know, messenger dot turned from green to yellow, that was a violation. I had to answer all phone calls within five rings. It wasn't allowed to go to voicemail. I had like just absolutely ridiculous, overbroad and overbearing telework agreement requirements. And I've been teleworking for a really long time. It just all of a sudden changed. And I refused to sign them, and here we are today. I no longer work.
And you're victorious, and thank God, you know, you stuck it out, and you it worked out for you. I'm so happy for you.
Thank you. Yeah, and we stayed in the agency. Yeah, this is an amazing lawsuit, and you know, personally, because of I know what I've been through, and on a much smaller scale, I was not Donald Trump's personal fixer. but that kind of shows how much he retaliates, like how far these tentacles go for retaliation, a podcast, you know. And so how can it be anything but clear that he would do this to Michael Cohen, who was about to drop a best-selling book?
Right. And we enumerated at least two other examples in our complaint, you know, what he did to his niece, Mary Trump, and what he did to Mustache.
Oh, John Bolton?
John Bolton, yes. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he did the same thing there. So he has a pattern of practice of doing it. You're another excellent example of that. I mean, it's just, it's disgusting. It's exactly primarily why I entered, you know, the law and practicing this type of law. I mean, this is the epitome of what we need to fight. You know, it may start out like this and, you know, comparatively speaking, we're not being thrown. Well, in Michael's case, he was thrown in jail, but we're not being beaten or shot yet. But that's, you know, I mean, how far with a Trump-like personality would you have? How far down the road would that be? You know what I'm saying? If we get to that point where he's allowed to get away with these things, you know, if we didn't have judges like Judge Hellerstein or, the judicial branch to rule repeatedly against him, to stand up to him and not be cowed or intimidated in any way by him. So, you know, thank God that things worked out for you. And I'm hopeful that things are going to work out for us as well, because we can't stand idly by and allow things like this to occur.
I think they should. Andy McCabe is another great example.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he was able to get his retirement for the retaliatory firing hours before his retirement was supposed to kick in. So Michael Cohen's no longer in prison. The book is out. So what is the prayer for relief? What are the damages that you're looking for?
Well, look, we're looking for compensation for his, you know, obviously there's a civil rights compensation there, but also for his time that he spent in lockup. You know, he was in solitary for a number of days, for weeks even. And part of that, you know, was the COVID protocol, but he would never have had to go through that had they not retaliated against him. So we find that they're going to be responsible for that. You know, there's innumerable things that they did here, which I feel that are worth a significant amount of money.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And I wish you the best. And I hope you'll keep us posted as to how this moves along. I'm assuming there's going to be it doesn't seem like there's a lot of good lawyers left over in Trumpville, you know, with this Michael Flynn really sad petition for an emergency restraining order, and he failed to show injury or harm. He didn't even notify the other side he was doing it. I am a stronger lawyer than the lawyer, a much stronger lawyer.
And I'm not
even one. So I'm interested to see what sort of pretrial motions to dismiss they might, or not pretrial, but motions to dismiss they might file.
I mean, this is a 12B1, 12B6, you know, FRCP motion to dismiss that. I'm assuming DOJ is going to deal with it, but maybe, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I'm fairly certain they'll deal with it. And this thing is getting tossed out. There's no basis. You know, these lawsuits, they're there to scare people and they think it's going to drag things out, but it really isn't. They fought, like I said yesterday on Twitter, they finally got smart and asked for a TRO, but they didn't even do that right. I mean, I can't believe we've been years and years and years and no one's asking for a TRO. I mean, there's no obligation for Congress to stop, you know, doing, you know, their investigation if there's no TRO. And there's no way a judge is, a federal judge is going to, you know, jump in on something like this, because it's a political act by Congress and separation of powers. And there's nothing here for a judge to really issue a ruling on that he or she would have a right to. So,
yeah. And there's a million judges who have said that this is a lawful official proceeding. This is a lawful, the committee has the authority, it's lawfully put together. And you're right. The, if judges start telling Congress what they can and can't do,
right,
that's worry. Yeah, we're in trouble.
Yeah, no, that would be worrisome. You know, I mean, that's the thing here. The center must hold. I always say that, you know, each branch has their role. I don't want the executive, you know, overtaking the legislative responsibilities, and I don't want, you know, legislative taking over judicial and vice versa. They all have their boundaries there and they need to adhere to them.
Yeah, I just wish of the three branches that the contempt branch, the contempt rules for Congress were equal to that of the judicial or the executive. But here we are. We'll see what happens. Anyway, I thank you for your time today. I'll keep in touch because I'm really interested to see how this goes and wish you the best.
Thank you so much, Allison. It was great to be here.
Thanks. Andy Laufer. We'll be right back. Everybody stick around. Hey, everybody. It's AG for the Daily Beans, and I have an important question for you. Are you getting enough? I'm sure you would love more. Well, lovely listeners, our sponsor today, AdamandEve.com, wants to give you more with 50% off just about any item, plus free shipping on your entire order. For more than 50 years, AdamandEve.com has built a reputation as a trusted and reliable adult toy store that takes pleasure and privacy seriously. So when you want to shop erotic toys or gifts, AdamandEve.com has it all. For men, women, straight, gay, anywhere in between, everyone, Adam and Eve has something you're looking for. They have an amazing variety of erotic products. So what do you have to do to get your 50% off one item and free shipping? It's not hard. Just go to AdamandEve.com, select any one item. It could be an adventurous new toy, maybe something to wear, anything you desire. And just enter offer code DAILYBEANS, all one word, at checkout, and you'll get 50% off almost any item. Go check out AdamandEve.com today. Select one item, get 50% off, including free shipping, when you enter the code DAILYBEANS. You know it, DAILYBEANS, at AdamandEve.com. We've heard about getting stuff out in time for the holidays, so do your shopping now. Don't wait, and go to AdamandEve.com now. Shop now, shop early, and hurry while supplies last. Everybody, welcome back. I'm joined today by the host of the Law Junkie podcast, my friend Ethan Behrman. Ethan, hello.
I can't believe you're having me on the show. It is just such an honor to be here. And it's great to talk to you. I'm honored that you've invited me on. This is great. I'm so excited.
The honor is all mine, Fox Slayer. If people aren't familiar with your work, frequently see you on Fox just tearing into people with, you know, excellent arguments and pushback, and it's fun to watch. It's fun to watch you work, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It is sometimes a thankless job, but I just received thanks, so thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. So when I went to bed last night, well, I before I was woken up by the skunk incident of 2021, there were three juries deliberating. There was the Elizabeth Holmes, Kim Potter, and Ghislaine Maxwell. Woke up this morning, sort of, after the skunk incident, and we got a verdict in the Kim Potter trial. And a verdict, honestly, that I don't think many people were expecting. She was found guilty on both counts, first degree and second degree, manslaughter. I honestly thought they wouldn't get the first degree charge, but the jury came back with a guilty verdict. I was wondering what your top line thoughts were on that news that is just now breaking.
Yeah, just breaking as you and I are sitting down together here. I am bluntly shocked on the first degree conviction, first degree manslaughter, which is different from homicide, where you're committing an act with the knowledge that you're going with the intent to take somebody's life. Manslaughter means that you didn't necessarily mean to take somebody's life. And Minnesota has a specific statute on this. Intentionally causing the death of another person in the heat of passion. That in other jurisdictions is called a depraved heart murder as well. So they call it first degree manslaughter in Minnesota, but there are five different types. The issue here that I was a little concerned about is I don't believe that I had seen the evidence, and now I didn't see everything in the Kim Potter trial that showed the premeditation there, that it was an intent to kill. And that is the difference between first degree and second degree. Second degree means that you acted negligently, which resulted in the death of somebody. That I can absolutely see. But first degree, the concern that I would have, this is my gut reaction because the news just broke, is I worry that their police officers, look, while there are all kinds of reforms that need to happen within law enforcement in the United States, this idea that all cops are bad is a bad one. And it's a wrong take. Many good police officers out there, I've known many over the years. And if you're going to put them in a dangerous situation, because we do have criminals that are heavily armed in our major cities in particular, like Minneapolis included.
Especially with the rise of militant groups and extremist groups, domestic terrorist groups, white supremacists, etc. That's where my concern comes in.
Yeah. And so cops have to be able to defend themselves. And it's the reason we haven't gone the UK approach of cops not having firearms, because we have over 300 million guns in circulation in our country. And there is a subset of people. And I grew up in Minneapolis, by the way. And I remember the murder and assassination of a police officer named Jerry Hoff. It was a gang initiation murder of an officer. And they literally walked in and murdered the police officer as part of a gang initiation. Officers have to be armed in our country, right, wrong, or other. I wish there were no guns so they didn't have to be armed like in the UK. But we do have them, and officers have to be able to defend themselves. And if they have to now think twice or three times in the heat of the moment, whether or not they're going to be able to defend themselves, I believe we're going to have an even harder time recruiting what you and I might believe to be the right kind of police officer. I think that's a deeply problematic outcome of a first degree manslaughter charge, conviction, excuse me, in this case.
Well, I imagine that this ruling will be appealed. I have yet to look at the
automatic appeal, by the way.
I'm just wondering if they might have a more of a chance than something in like the Chauvin trial, for example, to win on this. You and I have a little bit different view on this, but I'm interested to see what happens on appeal.
Yeah, and again, there's another example that I thought was going to be the example going into this case. So in San Francisco, was that almost 10 years ago now? A young African American man, Oscar Grant, was in a BART station, Bay Area Rapid Transit, and a BART officer did the same exact thing that Kim Potter claimed here, which was, I thought I was grabbing my taser. I accidentally grabbed my firearm. And in that case, Oscar Grant, again, was killed. But the jury did not convict the officer because there is a reasonableness in the heat of the moment that an officer could make that kind of mistake. Now, I don't think that that's a good excuse, but it's a reasonable is the standard. Under our existing legal system. And it's reasonable that the officer would grab the wrong weapon.
Right. And that's sort of where my difference lies there is.
Yes.
I don't see how she could have mistaken her taser for her gun. But does that rise to the standard, the criminal standard of proving a first degree? I'm not sure. I was frankly concerned that they wouldn't get the verdict on the first degree charge, but they would on the second. And negligent homicide. So this is a different outcome, I think, than most people were expecting. I can say that with confidence.
Well, and remember, I think it's really important that it is very rare that we convict officers for killing somebody, and it is very rare in this country. And so this is new territory. Derek Chauvin now convicted for the murder of George Floyd, Kim Potter. Now has been convicted for the first degree manslaughter of Dante Wright. So this is an interesting new pattern, and it's going to be very you know, the greater societal changes that are happening, this is going to be an interesting one now to see this pattern happening in Minnesota. And if it's going to change behaviors, are we going to have fewer police shootings as a result?
I hope so. I hope that is the,
yeah, me too.
I hope that is the outcome. Now on Law Junkie, you are focusing pretty hardcore. Well, Ghislaine Maxwell, whatever, that lady's crazy guilty, but you're focused on the Elizabeth Holmes trial. And so I wanted you to maybe give a brief sort of breakdown about what the case is, how you felt the prosecution and defense did, and what you're expecting, what the charges are, and what kind of verdict you're expecting in the Elizabeth Holmes trial.
It's very interesting. Yeah. On Law Junkie show, we jumped on the Elizabeth Holmes trial because it's a fascinating one. I'm going to rewind in time just a little bit. I used to be on the air with a radio show in San Francisco, and I watched Theranos kind of explode onto the scene. And I have a friend, my best friend, one of my best friends, his wife used to work in a blood testing lab. And so when Theranos broke on the scene, I'm like, there's so much cult of personality going on here. I hate it. I'm suspicious anytime I see that. And I would kind of pick on Theranos on the air in San Francisco back in 2014. This was before John Kiriou's expose in the Wall Street Journal that kind of ended everything ultimately for Theranos. And on Law Junkie show, we decided to pick up this case because it's fascinating. This is so different from so many other cases. And interestingly enough, we're talking about three women defendants today. And that alone makes me a little curious. You know, Silicon Valley has a tremendous track record of mostly male entrepreneurs who successfully raise a ton of money based on, I don't want to call it vaporware, but future promises, which our society allows. Our Federal Trade Commission allows a lot of leeway in terms of how we market things. It's called, in the legal realm, we call that puffery. And it's fascinating. Elizabeth Holmes dropped out of Stanford to start this revolutionary new company called Theranos that, based on a single finger poke and a drop of blood, was going to be able to test just about anything, where somebody like I, who went in for a full battery of tests ordered by the doctor the other day, had to draw five yeah. vials of blood to send off to the labs. And so this was going to change everything. And she had this pedigree and Stanford and a professor at Stanford who was kind of a guide who led her into this. And then she got the most wealthy and powerful people in the world to fund it, from the Drapers in the hedge fund world to the Larry Ellisons, George Shultz, Rupert Murdoch, name a wealthy, powerful person they invested. This thing was valued at up to $9 billion. But she wasn't able to necessarily do everything she was promising. And so it blew up. There was an SEC settlement related to the way she communicated with investors. That was a civil trial. And then for the last couple of years, the U.S. attorney in the Northern District of California has been working on this case, and it's criminal charges against Elizabeth Holmes and then her, basically her partner, because he was actually her romantic partner as well as helping run the company. Sonny Balwani will have a separate trial starting, I think, in about a month is when his trial starts, for wire fraud against the investors, a separate count of wire fraud against the doctors, and another count of wire fraud against the patients, and then conspiracy to commit those same wire frauds. It was a grand total of 11 counts against her.
And this reminds me of currently right now also being investigated, I think, in the DC U.S. Attorney's Office with Sidney Powell raising $14 million for her Defend the Republic PACs, a 501c3, 501c4 matching set, for wire fraud, defrauding, basically raising money based on lies. Hers was the big lie, obviously, you know, quote unquote, the big lie. Which is what it will be known as from now until eternity. Kind of, I'm a Cleveland Browns fan, so I know what the fumble and the drive are. So this is the big lie. And that's the same kind of, this is, well, I should ask, this is the same sort of fraud case, right? Because she defrauded funders by, through misinformation.
Well, that's the allegation. And the jury is deliberating it as we are talking today still. And I think they might even get a whole week off. There was a jury was off the other day. We don't know exactly why that was. What's also interesting in the Elizabeth Holmes case is the jury asked to take the jury instructions home. And of course, the judge in this case, depending on how you hear it pronounced, Judge Davila or Davila in San Jose, California, he said, absolutely not. What the key here with wire fraud is it has a very, it's a U.S. code, what the crime is. And I want to talk about this for a second, because while you might hate Elizabeth Holmes and you think she did wrong, this is a criminal trial. It's not a civil trial. So you have all of the proof is it's on the prosecution to present evidence at trial for the jury to see, and the jury must conclude on each element of the crime, on each one of the charges, counts against Elizabeth Holmes, the prosecution only using the evidence as presented at trial, not what you heard, not what you read from John Kiriru, not what you saw on Netflix, only the admitted evidence at trial. The prosecution has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. That's like what's talked about is that's greater than 95% sure that this is what happened. Meaning, even if you think, well, you know, maybe Elizabeth Holmes really didn't, then
so,
you can't find her guilty.
So she would have to have known she was lying, and you have to prove that with corrupt intent. And I'm going to keep using this Sidney Powell case as something else we can refer to that we're all well versed in, at least the listeners of this program, proving that she knew she was lying about election fraud, and in fact she had even submitted in defense of her sanctions trial that no reasonable person could believe a word she was saying, and that kind of evidence is what you could use to go toward intent. Do you think they did that in the Elizabeth Holmes trial?
So here's the problem. You have two elements of wire fraud, and this is where the Elizabeth Holmes evidence looks to be dramatically different from Sidney Powell. I think the Sidney Powell case is much stronger, at least on the face of it, from what I've seen. And again, we're not privy to see everything that's going on. But however, there are
no, we don't even have charges in the Sidney Powell case
right,
yet.
But it just looks really bad on the face of it. Whereas Elizabeth Holmes, I was honestly a little surprised that they brought criminal charges against her because of these two elements of wire fraud. So really quickly, there are four elements of wire fraud. The first is that the defendant knowingly participated in intended to devise the scheme or plan to defraud. Okay, that's element one. Element two, and this is where it starts getting really important. Element two is the statement made or facts omitted as part of the scheme were material. So that means if she lied about something, but you don't consider that to be a material fact that convinced the investors, that was a key part of the investors' decision to invest money into Theranos, you already lost then. If you can't prove that it was material in this case, and it's really hard. It's not really hard, like in the Sidney Powell case, for example, maybe, but or has a natural tendency to influence or were capable of influencing a person to part with their money or property. That's the second element. Third element, and this is the big one, the intent element. The defendant acted with the intent to defraud. That is the intent to deceive and cheat. I'm reading the actual jury instructions from the Ninth Circuit. So she had to go into it knowing I am doing this to cheat somebody. So if you're working feverishly to build a blood testing device and there are emails even after the John Kiriru story broke, even after she got rid of Sonny Ballwine and said, we're going to fix this thing. That's a huge opportunity that the defense presented in this trial to show if she intended to deceive and cheat people why was she still trying to get it to work even after the company started collapsing?
Yeah, this isn't like a Madoff situation where
that's right.
You just take the money and don't do anything.
And that one's very clear too. So this is a very complicated fraud case, you know, with tens of thousands of exhibits shown at trial. It was over a 3-month long trial. So it's very complicated, lots of evidence presented, a number of really important witnesses, including former lab directors, General Mattis was one of the people who testified at trial.
Mad Dog? Moderate Dog Mattis?
Yes, exactly. He had been an investor. He had served on the board. He had felt like he had been misled. And he was a prosecution witness in this case. And we devoted, I think, an entire episode to his testimony on Law Junkie Show. But look, this is very difficult. Unlike Madoff, where it's numbers. It's forensic accounting to show he had money coming in. He never invested it anywhere. He spent all this money on his life. Boom. Elizabeth Holmes, her salary was about $300,000 a year for a $9 billion company. Mm-hmm. She wasn't running off with the money. So Bernie Madoff, that's clear. Sidney Powell, I think there's going to be some strong arguments on how that money was used. In the Elizabeth Holmes case, it's challenging to show how she used the money for a fraudulent end.
Legal question. The material element of wire fraud, is that similar to the material element in a 1001 charge?
I don't know. I'd have to read the elements in the 1001 charge to know specifically. So forgive me that I don't have the perfect answer for that. But generally speaking, material means it was important for whatever the decision was that was made. So a great example of that is I bought a house and you forgot to tell me that it was haunted, for example. Is that really material to whether or not somebody would have bought the house? Well, that depends on the person and the reasonableness standard that the jury will apply. So if I am terrified of ghosts and I'm able to present that at trial and I have a history and even my psychologist comes and testifies, now that's a material fact that you omitted. To the average person, that's probably not material. So, or for example, you know, paint was peeling in that room and you forgot. I asked you how many times has that room been repainted? And you repainted it 5 times and you told me 3. That's not material. Mm. So I'm not going to rescind the contract. Same thing here with the investors, at least in the Elizabeth Holmes trial. Some of these people were very serious about their investment. These were legitimate investors. That's all they do. They're professional investors. It's not you or me, where maybe for me, would have made a difference. For them, maybe it didn't. I'm not sure. Mm. And we're going to find out very quickly how the jury finds in this case, I think.
Yeah, the example I was thinking of that we went over recently on the show is the 1001, you know, lying to law enforcement material. Is the lie material? Is the indictment by John Durham of Sussman, Michael Sussman, who says he materially lied because his, you know, what he said to Jim Baker in a room all by himself may have change the way the FBI does stuff, maybe, might have, could have, possibly, but didn't have any concrete evidence of how it did change the FBI's response to how they would investigate it. And so the argument filed in the bill of particulars from Sussman's attorney was like, this isn't material. It's not material if it might have changed the way the FBI does something. It actually had to have.
Oof, I'm not the way Sussman's attorney described it is very good work on Sussman's attorney's part. Remember, we're supposed to zealously advocate for our clients, and it doesn't matter how much you hate whoever or love whoever is being charged with something. It is our jobs as attorneys, if we represent somebody, to do our job to our fullest capabilities. But really, the materiality element is typically that it has a tendency to change the outcome. It doesn't actually have to change it. So when you're talking about what Sussman's attorney argued, it doesn't have to have actually changed the outcome of what the FBI was doing. It had to have the tendency to, meaning, again, it's this reasonableness standard as the jury is looking at it saying, as I observe this, yeah, that could have changed it. Reasonable.
Well, the other part of the argument was that it was material because he, you know, the FBI didn't know that this person was working on behalf of Clinton, but actually everybody at the FBI knew that.
Everybody knew that. Yeah. I mean,
There's a million other problems with this case, not just that one. I was just interested in the materiality part, but that, yeah, we're going to see what happens. I imagine maybe they're going to be off for the next week or so, and then perhaps, you know, maybe they'll pick back up. But what do you think the outcome will be?
So I give it 30% chance she's found guilty. And I think the jury might actually do something that juries technically aren't supposed to do, but they're human beings. And so they do this type of thing, which is they maybe think she did something wrong, but it didn't rise to the level of wire fraud. They might find her guilty on a lesser charge, maybe a conspiracy count, just because they're mad that she did do all of this, but it didn't quite rise to the level. Juries absolutely have the right to do that. They're not supposed to, but they do.
Does the prosecution have to say we will take a lesser charge, or can they just do it without that?
I'm sorry. When I say lesser, I mean of the charges against Elizabeth, one of the less serious ones, which is the conspiracy, which ultimately, actually, technically, conspiracy can lead to the same amount of jail time, probation, et cetera. But typically, that is not the case, that you're going to get a lesser charge. I think if she's found guilty of anything anyway, and if she's not found guilty on all the significant wire fraud charges, she's getting like probation and maybe 30 days at the most. She has a newborn. There's a lot of conspiracy around the fact that she had a baby through this. And people have a lot to say. They really don't like Elizabeth Holmes. I'm not a fan of hers either, but there are companies that are now successfully doing finger poke blood tests in portable machines, including in San Diego, California, is one of them.
Yeah, where I live. Well, thank you so much. It's been great to talk to you. Tell everyone where they can follow you and find your podcast.
Oh, so it's Law Junkie Show. We're on all the major platforms, Spotify, Apple. We have lawjunkieshow.com website. We take feedback there from our listeners, obviously on YouTube, or me personally is just at Ethan Behrman. And Twitter is my most common platform.
Samesies, my bread and butter. Well, you have a wonderful holiday. We're going to be off next week. We will have content, everyone. Don't worry. You will get content next week. I'll be on vacation, and I hope you have some restful times until the new year.
Happy holidays.
Everybody stick around. We'll be right back with the good news.
Hey, everybody. This final portion of the show is brought to you by Scribd. Streaming entertainment has revolutionized our lives. We used to wonder if there was anything good on TV. Now we have so many options, we can't decide what we're in the mood for. Remember the old song, 57 channels and nothing's on? Yeah, it's a little different these days. Same thing goes for books. Instead of standing in front of your bookshelf waiting for a title to jump out at you, sign up for Scribd. You get instant access to millions of ebooks and audiobooks, magazines, journal articles, dissertations, court documents, and more, along with thoughtfully curated editor's picks and smart recommendations based on what you've already read, which makes choosing your next book that much easier. And it's all for one low monthly price, too. It's the ultimate reading subscription service that lets you explore all of your interests in any format you choose for just $9.99 a month. That's less than the cost of a single book. I love using Scribd. I get to discover must-read new work from celebrated authors that premiere exclusively on Scribd. And when I want to change things up, I can switch between titles and genres and formats anytime on my phone, tablet, or computer. Right now, we're offering listeners of this show a 60-day trial for free. So go to try.scribd.com/AG for your free trial. That's try.scribd, scribd.com/AG to get 60 days of Scribd for free. And today's show is also brought to you by Evite. You're going to have a small single household or, you know, like pandemic pod New Year's Eve get together like I am, then Evite to the rescue. I'm looking forward to celebrating this day, and I'm inviting folks over to my place, and I really want it to be special. So I'm not going to call them. I'm not going to do a group text. I'm going to use Evite. Evite offers thousands of free invitation options, all fully customizable for your occasion, whether it's a birthday, wedding, New Year's Eve, baby shower, holiday parties, whatever you're into, whatever you're doing, no matter how big or small. You can choose a design created by their community of professional artists, or you can upload your own design. Evite's design templates make it easy, fun, and very simple to create an invitation. So everything you're celebrating is extra special. It takes just minutes. It's so user-friendly. And you can send the invitations to everyone on your guest list. And the coolest thing, RSVP tracking is included for free. And Evite makes it super easy to link to a gift registry or a gift list. It's all free. I use Evite for all of my meaningful get-togethers, especially at the holidays or birthdays, and I can use one of their designs, like I said, or I'm actually created my own. I'm going to upload it for New Year's Eve. It's fun from start to finish. Evite's very simple, easy, wonderful. It's a lifesaver with those RSVP tracking, too. And Evite has helped making my celebrations extra special, and they can help you, too. So head to evite.com/beans to choose from thousands of design options to create and send invitations for free. And if you already use Evite, just do it. Evite, evite.com/beans. Use our URL. Let them know we sent you. That's evite.com/beans. You'll be glad you did. And Happy New Year. Everybody, welcome back. It's time for the good news. Well, we're blown on good news. It's on the way. Yay, Christmas Eve good news. This should be good. I'm excited.
There seems to be a lot of good news.
Yes, Christmas today. Eve edition.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. Yeah, me too. This is great. If you have any good news you want to send in, you can send us anything pretty much. And you can do that by going to dailybeanspod.com and clicking on contact.
You can send us anything.
Just whatever you want. We're fine. We're fine with it, really. First up from Cheryl, no pronouns given. This is a shit kid say. My nephew asked Alexa to play Feliz Navidad. And when it started to play, he was singing Feliz Naughty Dad. His mother couldn't stop laughing, so now we have a new Christmas song. Happy holidays to all the Beans Queens.
Feliz Navidad, Naughty Dad.
Feliz Naughty Dad. All right, and next up, I'll take this second one here from Tom. Yeah. Pronouns he, him, dad. Allison and Amy, more thanks for the sanity that is you. Good news. I made my semi-traditional holiday chocolate pie again for today's family gathering at my sister's. This is Greta Christina's chocolate pie, the spicy version. Really easy. Even I can make it. This was impossible last year due to many 2020 reasons. So far, we're still gathering, assuming everyone tests negative. My sister even brought extra test kits in case anyone couldn't find one where they live. Nice. Send me some.
Nice. Nice.
Also, I am worried that my mom's wonderful assisted living home may lock her down. But so far, she's good to go. I'm also happy with the James Webb Space Telescope launch that has been delayed to Christmas Day. It gives me something to get up early for. Pet tax, Yorkie in a blankie. She's snoring away. Not going to disturb her. Have a great holiday. Chocolate pie.
I have to say I'm a little disappointed we don't get a recipe. Where's the chocolate pie recipe?
I know, right? And where's the dog?
Yeah, where's the dog? Wait, where is the dog?
It's wrapped up in the burrito blankie.
Oh, that's cute. Do we get a paw? Am I missing it?
Maybe we get a little bit of a snoot at the top there. I can't tell.
Oh, yeah. I can't tell either. But hey, listen, we believe you, Tom. Mm-hmm. Also, send in that recipe. We want it.
Yep.
Next up from Matt, pronouns he, him. Hello, Beans Queens. I have two good news stories about Thor and Cleo. Thor is a Christmas Eve doggo and turned 15 this year. Aww. We have had him since he was 6 weeks old. Our void child, Cleo, is especially good news. Last Christmas, we spent the day at the emergency vet because she threw up blood. Oh, no. We went to many vets over a few months span and found a cat specialist here in Ventura County. For months, she threw up daily and lost half her body weight. Good grief. We didn't think we would have her past Halloween, let alone Christmas. We have her on meds now, not throwing up anymore, and slowly gaining weight, and always wants to cuddle now. Poor baby. She was diagnosed with inflammatory bowel disease, IBS, or lymphoma. We know we have a limited time with her. She's getting spoiled every day, and every holiday she's going to have a big Sweet 16 in February. Thank you for the shows. Happy holidays.
No.
Babies.
Yeah, honey.
Little sleepy babies.
Look at the puppy with the foot on the nose.
Oh my god, that dog is just so cute.
Adorbs. Next up from Patrick, adorbs. Pronouns he and him. Dear Lima ladies. Okay.
Ooh, I'll take that.
I'm just ready to pay my second installment of Pod Pet Tax. Good, Patrick, because you were about to have to start paying penalties. The big gray dipshit with blue eyes is Frankie. The little tabby girl with my girlfriend is Vin, named after Vin Venture from the Mistborn series. I've also included another picture of Eris. Thanks for keeping us both informed and relatively sane. I also have an observation I'd like to share about Louis Gohmert. He's so dense that his Schwarzschild radius is easily several hundred feet. All right. Nice. Nice.
Nice. Oh, wow. Oh, cuties.
The blue-eyed dipshit.
Dipshit. I love that. I love dipshit. Look at that last one. How elegant.
Oh, very long neck. Very Egyptian, kitty.
Very Egyptian.
Sitting up on the haunches, too. Look, the front feet are up off the bed.
Yes. Very elegant, but also scary in the middle of the night. Can you imagine, like, with that posture, getting up and you're just like, ah!
What the fuck? Yeah.
What the fuck, man? Sorry.
Hilarious.
Gosh, well, love that. Okay, next up, no name given, pronouns she, her. Happy holidays to the world's greatest Beanie Babies. Oh, man, they're killing it. Mm-hmm. Beanie Babies, Lima Ladies, love it. The entire MSW Network and all of you who listen every day with me, I love you all. Let's have a kick-ass 2022 and get accountability for all those who tried to take down our democracy. Amen. Yes. Anyway, I am submitting a what the mutt. This is Bella. She showed up 4 years ago starving and covered in ticks. She is awesome. She takes great care of her three Chihuahua brothers. Hint, she is a mix of five breeds.
Five, I'm getting my pen.
Wow.
Okay.
And the second pick with her and the three boys should cover my pet tax. Again, love to all. P.S. The tricolor Chi is not being left out. He just refuses to wear clothes.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Love, of course.
All right. Let's look at this baby. Okay, so definitely
scroll down.
Definitely some pit bull in here. Definitely some pibble, right? Mm-hmm. How about a boxer?
Boxer for sure.
How for about a Rottie, maybe?
Definitely Rottweiler. And then we got to throw in the Chow Chow because you say they're in every dog.
Chow and a Shepherd.
You think a Shepherd? Okay, good.
Well, let's look at those toes. The toes are as long as my fingers, dude.
Oh my God, they're like fingers.
All right, here we go. Okay. Pitbull, Chow, Rottie,
hey,
Staffordshire Terrier, and Bulldog.
Bulldog.
Okay.
We didn't guess Bulldog.
We got three, though.
That's pretty good.
Nice.
Well, the Chow Chow is like a freebie because you're right.
Yeah.
There's Chow Chow on every dog.
Chows, man. They get around.
They get around. Mm-hmm. Look at that little tiny.
Yeah.
Oh, two baby, three tinies.
Aww. Oh, my Very God. Cute. Yeah. How many dogs are in this photo? I see four now. Cute. Okay.
Yeah.
So cute.
Oh, babies.
Next up from Lisa L, pronouns she and her. And Lisa says, hello, Leguminati. I recently finished Ruth Ben-Ghiat's Strong Men after hearing her interview on your show. It's both depressing yet reassuring to know that, as with other strong men throughout history, there will be an end to Trump and the big lie. I need to believe that the arc of the moral universe bends toward justice, as MLK says. I also wanted to write in response to your interview with House candidate from Pennsylvania, Ashley Ehas. She had said something along the lines of how being pro-choice was also being pro-family. It reminded me of an anonymous post I'd read on Reddit. The person said that they were born because their mom had been able to access abortion when she was younger. I'd never heard the abortion debate framed in that way. The access to abortion allows women to be mothers when they feel ready for the responsibility. Anyway. Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Allison, Dana, Amy, your guest co-hosts, and your guests for helping make sense of the world. I've included a picture from last year of my rat, Sigurd, enjoying his portion of Christmas dinner, spinach lasagna and cranberry sauce. He has since passed, but I still have two rats with whom I will share this year's Christmas dinner. All the best to everyone at The Beans and best wishes for a fantastic 2022. I love rats so much. They're so cute.
I fucking love rats too. Look how cute that rat is. Oh my gosh, such a tiny little portion. I don't know why. I guess because Pizza Rat has really
changed the rules. Yeah.
Has really changed the rules for all of us. So I was expecting like a full slice of lasagna.
Just a giant turkey, like a turkey leg in the mouth. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, also New York rats are...
Different,
you know,
different special.
Different animals. I mean, truly, for real.
Yeah.
How cute. This is so a very adorable. Dainty, very cute rat. Love it.
Love it.
Okay, next up, Sarah Lee, pronouns she, her. Hello, longtime listener here, almost, but not quite since the kitchen table days. Living as I do in a conservative small town in Ohio, it's hard not to get discouraged about our country's future. Your podcasts are a daily gift of hope and perspective, and you get me started in the right frame of mind every day. Yeah. My family and I are doing all right, so I don't have any big news, just this little find the cat picture. I adopted Glinda from our local Humane Society shelter a year and a half ago. She's a polite little lady with a very soft meow, and definite ideas about her entitlement to adequate lap time and playtime. Wishing all the best to Allison, Dana, Amy, and the rest. And the rest.
Oh, I see. I see her already.
Oh, there she is.
Look at that tuxedo baby girl.
Little tuxie.
You're so cute. And she likes books. Yay.
We love a cat that loves books.
Absolutely. Oh. All right. It's time for Amy's Court. Dung, dung. I have a friend with a young daughter. She's very sweet. Her name is Amy. Good name.
Mm-hmm.
Her dad sometimes doesn't call her that. When she's very brave or kind or clever, he puts on a voice and says, "Shira."
Oh.
Shares her toys to everyone so everyone can have fun. Or Shira eats all the peas so she's even more strong. And this makes her laugh and giggle. So I was at this Christmas bash. I only showed up to honor the invitation and make an excuse to leave. And little Amy was there. I think she could see I was feeling blue. She had a candy cane, which she snapped in half and offered me the hook part. When I reached out to accept it, I said, "Thanks, Amy." And she shook her little head and came close to my ear so only I could hear and said, "I am Shira."
Oh, my God.
The case before Amy's court. Who's the real Shira?
Oh, it's Amy. Amy AMY, the little girl Amy. No. No debate. The jury has closed the decision. Mm. I don't know legal terms, but Allison does. So.
We can just do a summary judgment filing motion here. Yeah. We don't even need to take this to trial.
We don't need to take this. No, this is an open and shut case, as the pros would say. And oh, what a sweetheart. She sounds like such a cool person.
Now, you know what would be a great gift for sweet little Amy is a shirt that says, "I am Shira."
Oh, that would be cute. I would love that.
I would wear the shit out of that shirt.
I have a Shira shirt and I wear it all the time. In fact, when I went to that convention in Seattle on my first day there, I wore the Shira shirt and all these people dressed as Shira were like, "Oh, cool Shira shirt." And I was like, mm-hmm. So
you don't even love know. That. Yeah.
You have no idea. But it was very cool. And I love that Shira is, you know, inspiring this young, lovely person to, you know, do good for others and really stretch that empathy muscle. So,
yeah. And every time she does something awesome, she, you know, she gets to be Shira. So that like would probably, that would make me want to do good things
more awesome
often.
Things. Yeah. Come on. So cool.
Random acts That's of awesome. Shira, we'll call it.
Whoa. Is that a new segment?
Yeah. Hey, send in your random acts of Shira.
Random acts of Shira.
Anyway, that's it. And everybody, you'll hear me again this Sunday. I have the penultimate second to last episode of the MSW Book Club. I'll be going over chapters 11 and 12 in Here Right Matters by Alexander Vindman. And then January 2nd, we do have an episode of the MSW Book Club. It's me and Alexander Vindman answering your questions.
What?
Yeah. And then also this Sunday, Muller, She Wrote. I'm going to be talking with Asha Rangappa, one of my favorite people.
I love her show.
She is the best,
man.
I'll see you Sunday, and then I'll see you a week after that. Amy, I hope you have a wonderful holiday and some good nice time off.
Thank you. You too, and I'll see you soon.
Yeah, but until then, everybody, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, take care of the planet, take care of your mental health. I've been AG,
and I've been Amy Carrero,
and them's the beans.
The Daily Beans is written and executive produced by Allison Gill, with additional research and reporting by Dana Goldberg and Amy Carrero. Sound design and editing is by Desiree McFarlane, with art and web design by Joel Reeder with Moxie Design Studios. Music for The Daily Beans is written and performed by They Might Be Giants, and the show is a proud member of the MSW Media Network, a collection of creator-owned podcasts dedicated to news, politics, and justice. For more information, please visit mswmedia.com.
They Might Be Giants have been on the road for too long.
Too long.
And They Might Be Giants aren't even sorry.
Not even sorry.
And audiences like the shows too much.
Too much.
And now They Might Be Giants are playing their breakthrough album, Flood.
All of it.
And they still have time for other songs.
They're fooling around.
Who can stop They Might Be Giants and their liberal rock agenda?
Who?
No one.
This ad was paid for with somebody else's money.
Hi, this is John Cryer, and I am hosting a new 7-part true crime podcast called Lawyers, Guns, and Money that'll challenge everything you think you know about U.S. covert operations and presidential misconduct. From Jack Bryan, the director of American PSYOP, comes the incredible true story of John Mattis, a newly sworn-in Miami public defender in the 1980s who has found himself completely in over his head.
I step off the plane, and there is a van with a couple guys with Uzis. And one of them in broken English said, "Welcome to Bogota, John."
Mattis's first felony defendant has been arrested for having a machine gun and tells Mattis a dangerous secret.
He was shipping arms into Central America on behalf of the CIA. As a first-time lawyer, I want to act like I know what I'm doing.
But with the help of a Colombian drug smuggler...
How much money the CIA raised by hitting up drug dealers?
A lot of money, millions of dollars.
An Alabama mercenary...
They were prepared to die to the last man. I saw this in them. I saw the fire in their eyes. And they made me their war chief.
And a newly elected senator, John Kerry.
We are looking at allegations of drug running, gun smuggling, conspiracy to commit murder and murder itself.
He'll fight to free his client.
The judge said, show me in a courtroom how we were at war.
Expose an illegal war being run by the White House.
I mean, I wanted him involved, but I didn't want to be on record as doing it.
And somehow stay alive in the process.
I just escaped a kidnapping by the CIA in Costa Rica.
This is Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
So you have a man in an Armani suit standing on the bow of a boat with a rocket launcher and says, if I lose sight of you, I will launch. You will be vaporized.
Available everywhere starting October 29th, or get it ad-free and early starting October 22nd at lawyersgunsandmoney.supercast.com. There you'll find bonus episodes along with exclusive content. Subscribe now.